Hi, welcome to the Fantastic Forecast, episode 419. I'm Dave Elliott. And listen for today's secret phrase, lady boner. Once you hear it, be the 10th caller, and you get free tickets to Saturday night's Hall & Oates concert. Today, Fantastic Four, 419, a.k.a. Volume 2, Number 3, from January 1997. Revelations, plot and pencils by Jim Lee, script by Brandon Choi. So the city of New York is under attack by the Submariner and the Atlanteans, who are upset with the surface world for polluting the oceans. I don't know why they singled out New York for this attack. Wouldn't it make more sense to start with Houston or Dallas, one of the oil cities? And unlike Fantastic Four Annual Number 1, when the Avengers decided to sit it out and let the FF deal with the invasion themselves, this time, in this universe, the Avengers are on the scene to help fight off the Atlanteans. First, we see Thor flying by the Statue of Liberty on his way to Manhattan. And there's a news report. Back in the 1990s, the image guys were in love with news reports as a way of delivering exposition. And a reporter is explaining how the Submariner is leading an attack on New York City. And then we see Captain America, the Rob Liefeld version, with the eagle symbol on his forehead instead of the big A. It always feels weird to see him without that A on his forehead. It's like Superman without the S on his chest. He's in a shield jet being flown to the area with the largest Atlantean forces, which is in Manhattan's Lower East Side. Down below, Giganto is plowing a path of destruction through a bunch of buildings, killing thousands, tens of thousands. And when Captain America sees a news helicopter in danger, he asks Thor to divert Giganto's attention. Giganto is blowing through building after building, so I'm not sure why one news helicopter gets their attention. But Sue goes into action, tosses his hammer at the creature, but it doesn't faze him. Giganto breathes green flame at the shield aircraft, damaging it severely. Next, we see the Submariner running his mouth off again about how he's going to get revenge on the humans for polluting the oceans and killing thousands of Atlanteans. And then, the invisible Sue Storm turns visible and begs Namor to please call off this attack and the senseless destruction. She says, "As the ruler of Atlantis, I understand why you would seek to avenge the deaths of your people, but is an innocent human life of any less value?" Namor is mesmerized by her beauty and is willing to hear her out. And he goes over and he touches her on the face. It seems like the idea of having a hot chick talk some sense into Namor might actually work. But Reed comes by and he freaks out. He yells at Namor to stop touching his girlfriend, and then Reed attacks him. Namor grabs Reed and swings his rubbery arm around. Johnny flies in and surrounds Namor with flames, which weakens him. Namor falls to the ground right beside a fire hydrant. Now, the first thing Johnny should have done is build the wall of flames between Namor and the fire hydrant. Namor rips the fire hydrant out of the ground. Water shoots up directly at Johnny. Why does the fire hydrant trick always work? The water always shoots in just the right direction to hit Johnny. Next, Ben Grimm comes over and tells Namor he's ready for a rematch. But before they can fight, Ben gets hit in the head with a 7-Up can. An angry mob of New Yorkers are telling Namor and Ben to get lost and return to the sea where they came from, mistaking Ben for a sea creature. So Ben is distracted by the mob, while Namor rejuvenates himself with the fire hydrant water, and he's ready to fight, and he punches Ben, and Ben goes flying into the air and into some building. Next, Thor's hammer swoops in and smacks Namor to the ground. He gets up and he looks over and he sees Captain America, who he hasn't seen in 50 years. Cap takes off his mask and assures Namor it really is his old World War II buddy, Steve Rogers. As Steve and Namor chit-chat, Krang looks on, and he is not happy. He was hoping that Namor would die in this attack on New York City, and he would become ruler of Atlantis. But now, with Namor and Cap getting all chummy with each other, this attack might not even last. So Krang wants to tell the other Atlanteans that Namor is cozying up to the land dwellers, and then they'll amp up their attack. Else when, which means in the past, in Jackson, Wyoming. Back before the space flight, Sue shows up in a helicopter at Ben's house to convince him to be the pilot for the Excelsior. But Ben, he says no. Sue tells him that someone has hacked into the Excelsior's data files and downloaded its technical specifications. And now, they're in a race into space to be the first people to get to that stellar anomaly.
Ben, we've got to beat those commies to the stellar anomaly, she could say.
Ben says that he's not a pilot anymore. He likes the quiet life. She keeps asking him why, but he won't really tell her why he doesn't want to go on the mission. But he does whisper to himself that he might be falling in love with his best friend's girlfriend. Yeah, it's a love triangle between Ben, Reed, and Sue. Just a few months ago, it was a love triangle between Ben, Johnny, and Elijah. Ugh, Ben. He just keeps getting in these love triangles, no matter what universe he's in. Sue calls him a coward, just like she did back in issue 1, the real issue 1. I guess no matter what universe they're in, Sue is still a big giant bitch, and responsible for dragging Ben along on this mission that turns him into a rock monster. Ben races after Sue and says that he just can't say no to a pretty face, especially hers. And then, he starts turning into a rock monster. It's not only a flashback, it's a dream of a flashback. And Ben wakes up face to face with Alicia Masters. They seem to be in Alicia's studio, and as he wakes up, Alicia's friend, or co-worker, Cass, says they ought to get the hell out of there. Ben asks where he is, and Alicia tells him that they're in her art gallery. She's Alicia Masters, the sculptor. Ben tells her to get away, not to look at him. But she's got her hands all over his face. She says that she's blind. She can get away with touching people's faces like that when they first meet. I cannot. Ben tells Alicia and Cass they should leave. It's too dangerous. But Alicia says she can't leave her gallery. And besides, they've turned it into a field hospital. And we see wounded people on the floor in bandages and stuff. Ben says that he admires her, but she's blind. It's too dangerous for her to be there. Alicia says that she may be blind, but she's not helpless. They all have obstacles to overcome in their lives, but they shouldn't allow them to control their lives. And she touches Ben's chest and says that's what's in there is what really matters. And she believes that he has the heart of a hero. Boy, this is his first meeting with Alicia, and they are really overdoing it. She's really got a major lady boner for this rock monster. Ben says he has to go, and Alicia tells him to be careful. Soon, Ben finds Giganto and gives Nick Fury a call on his belt communicator, saying he has a plan. Back with Namor and Captain America, things are going well until Reed, Sue, and Johnny show up. The FF are ready to attack Namor, and Namor is ready to attack the FF. But Cap tells everyone to calm down. Namor has agreed to... Oh, before he can say what Namor has agreed to, Namor has a massive headache and he falls to the ground. Lady Dorma says he must have contracted the plague. And Sue says they should get him back into the ocean. Namor says, Lady Dorma, we must call off the advance. Krang shows up and says he can't allow that to happen and proceeds to zap the shit out of Namor, Dorma, and Sue.
Since you've always had a fondness for the land dwellers, it is only fitting that you shall share their fate, Namor, Krang says.
Before he can do anything else, Cap shouts out, Avengers, assemble! And Thor and Captain America, along with the Human Torch, not much of an assemblage of two Avengers, and they proceed to fight with Krang and his cronies, and their two big pet pink octopuses, or octopi. Octopi make great pets, by the way. They're wonderful to cuddle up in bed with, great conversation starters when you take them for walks in the park, and when you run out, they can help you refill the ink in your printer. Reed rushes over to see if Sue's okay, and she's pretty dazed by that blast, but she's alive. Krang yells out to Giganto,
Destroy them all!
Dorma hears someone call Reed a doctor, so she asks Reed if he can check on Namor. Namor seems horribly injured. He's unconscious, bleeding, not moving, and Reed's not sure he can do anything to help. Sue reminds Reed that if Namor dies, Krang will take over as the ruler of Atlantis, and that would be bad news for the entire planet. Back over with Ben Grimm, Nick Fury lands his little plane nearby, and Ben tells him to get out. He's flying solo. Nick, not inclined to comply, has to be forcibly removed by Ben from the craft. Ben takes the plane, lifts off, flies toward Giganto, and we can guess where this is going. Meanwhile, Reed and Sue have taken Namor to the hospital, where Reed is working on him. I guess in this universe, Reed is also a medical doctor. There doesn't seem to be any hospital staff in the room with him, helping out. I guess they took Namor into the hospital. They said, "We don't need a doctor or nurse, we just want to borrow a room." So Reed has injected a series of antitoxins into Namor's system to neutralize toxins in his body, not a man-made toxin, but a compound derived from the venom of the deadly sea wasp, which is not actually a wasp, but a highly dangerous jellyfish. He's obviously been poisoned by Kang. Namor wakes up and starts choking Reed, but Dormus says he's been tricked by Krang, and Sue says they need Namor alive, and Reed says they need to help him stop Giganto, and Namor says he needs the trumpet horn to control Giganto, and I say, is this issue almost over yet? Back with Ben, he flies the ship into Giganto's mouth, but jumps out at the last second. The ship, well, it explodes, taking Giganto along with it, and ruining Krang's day. I think it was cooler when Ben carried the bomb down Giganto's throat back in the original version of this story. Namor heads up to a rooftop with a megaphone, telling all of his people to call off their attack on New York City. They've been deceived by Krang, who was trying to take his crown. "Lay down your arms," he says. "This war is over." A really short war. Blink and you miss it. And really, I'd hardly call that a war. More like a terrorist attack. A few hours later, Namor is saluting Captain America, and he tells him that in the future, he will seek redress for his grievances through more appropriate channels. He plans to seek redresses. He just had a giant whale creature rampage through Manhattan, killing thousands, causing massive 9/11-style damage. If anyone is going to be seeking redress for damages, it'll be the city of New York. Namor thanks Sue for saving his life and kisses her on the hand, and tells Ben it was an honor to fight with him. He was a worthy opponent. And Johnny's like, "Hey, what about me?" But just then, a bunch of reporters show up, snapping pictures and asking questions. They ask if they're new members of the Avengers, and Johnny replies that there are a new team in town, the Fantastic Four. It is curious. In this universe, the Avengers came first, and then the Fantastic Four came second. It's almost as if the Avengers are Marvel's flagship superhero team, and not the Fantastic Four. Can you imagine? That's so weird. A week later, Nick Fury is paying a visit to the Baxter Building, the FF's new home. He tells the FF that S.H.I.E.L.D. is investigating Storm Industries and the disappearance of Matthew Storm. He was Sue and Johnny's uncle. Seems like an odd way to bring up his disappearance. I don't know if that's an important plot point, or are they just trying to quickly write Matthew out of the book? We'll see. We learn that Sue and Johnny have quit the Storm Foundation to work with Ben and Reed, working for a philanthropist, Saul Baxter. Johnny asks Nick, "Whatever happened to Wyatt Wingfoot?" And Nick replies that he doesn't know, and he warns the FF to watch their backs. And that's the end of Issue 3. Coming next time, The Black Panther. I feel like Jim Lee's trying to fit in all the highlights of the Lee Kirby issues into 13 issues. So anyway, if you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. You can download other episodes at iTunes or find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. So long, kids, this podcast is over. Now nothing's added.